everybody. Welcome to episode 823 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is your New Comics Wednesday episode for April 24th, 2019. And all I have to say is I can't believe it's almost the end of April already, man. This year has been flying by.
I know, I agree.
So before we get started, I do want to mention that coming up at the end of May, let's see, I'll give you the exact dates. Yeah, it's May 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th is Phoenix Comic Con. So it's my hometown show. Bit of growing pains the last few years, but still a good show. Jeff Goldblum's going to be there. That's kind of the big name this year. I mean, tons of other guys. And in terms of comics, Roy Thomas is going to be there, Jerry Conway. Those are the two people I'm most excited to talk to. But a lot of great media guests and comic guests. Yeah, a lot of cosplay. There's always tons of cosplay. It's always a really, really good time. And hopefully Manny's going to be coming out as well. You still planning on making it out here for that?
As of right now, that is the plan.
Right on. So should be a good time. So before we dive into the books, I just want to remind everybody that this episode of The Comic Source is sponsored by Aftershock Comics, the independent comics and graphic novel publisher sending shockwaves throughout your local comic shop with groundbreaking series like A Walk Through Hell by Garth Ennis and Goran Suzuka. Latest issue is out today. Talking about it on the next Aftershock Monday. Also, Animosity by Marguerite Bennett and Raphael De La Torre, which I know is one of Manny's favorite Aftershock titles. Also, Dark Red by Tim Seeley with art by Corin Howell. Issue 2 just came out this week. That series has been on fire. I think issue 1 sold out and went back to a second printing. Very timely, very relevant. Also really good. The art is from Corin Howell is absolutely spectacular. And there's also new must-reads like Mary Shelley Monster Hunter from Adam Glass, Olivia Briggs, and Hayden Sherman. And we had Adam and Olivia on recently to talk about that title. Also, we had on Stephanie Phillips to talk about her Descent title that is drawn by Evgeny Bornikov. That's been an excellent title as well. Also coming soon, actually out today, is The Replacer by Zach Thompson and Arjuna Sasina. 1990s tragedy strikes the Beharrell family in the form of a debilitating stroke. Now the youngest child of that family is convinced his paralyzed father didn't truly fall ill, but is possessed by something sinister. He believes a demon, known as The Replacer, has come to take away his jolly, agreeable, tech-obsessed dad, but no one else seems to see the monster. And with every passing day, his father falls deeper into the clutches of evil. So what's interesting about this, it's based on Zach Thompson's true story of coming to terms with his own father having a disability. And it's a 64-page graphic novel, and it really explores the ideas of loss and tragedy and fear that you can only experience as a 9-year-old when you see this larger-than-life figure, your dad that you worship, fall ill because of this this terrible stroke that he suffered. So I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I did get the preview copy, but just been too busy. But I am looking forward to checking it out. Again, that's in Comic Source today as you hear this, April 24th from Zach Thompson with art by Arjuna Sasina. So be sure you check out all the Aftershock titles by going to AftershockComics.com, and remember to read dangerously. That's their slogan this year. They're challenging you to pick up something different, get away from Marvel, get away from DC. One thing I always say about Aftershock titles is they all have somewhat of an edge. Aftershock titles have a certain flavor that you can't get from the big two or really any of the Image titles either. They really have something special and a flavor all their own. So highly recommend you go to AftershockComics.com. There are story synopses and creator lineups for all their titles. Just click on the little series tab, and you can peruse all the titles they've put out to this point and find something that that suits your needs. So without further ado, we will get started on the books we're going to talk about today. What do you have up first, Manny?
I'll start off with Dial H for Hero number 2, written by Sam Humphries, with artwork by Joe Quinones, colors by Jordan Gibson. And so this is second issue of Dial H for Hero. Miguel has got in, has now has possession of the phone. And pretty much at the end, he also, he gets the phone call from the operator who pretty much gives him the warning to protect the phone, not to let it into the falls of the heroes of the Thunderbolt Club, who is a group of people who are very, very keen on possessing the H style phone. So it picks up where we left off with Miguel and with, I think her name's Elizabeth. Oh, sorry, no, Summer, are running away in Miguel's uncle's mayo truck, and now they're on the run. So this is also, this issue is going to give us our first look at the Thunderbolt Club. It's going to see the introduction or reintroduction, or just we're going to get to see a couple of fun other heroes that they turn into. And really good book, though. What I like about it is first issue, when we met Miguel, he was so enthralled with chasing that thrilling lifestyle, trying to recreate that feel he got from the time he was saved by Superman. But now that he found it via the age style, I think he finally he realizes in this issue that it might be a little bit more than he bargained for. It's scary, just even the thought of him being on his own with very little money and with really no idea of what to do. So it's really a case, I think, in this issue of be careful what you wish for or what you ask for. Because when you get it, you might find out that it's a lot more than you could have ever bargained for. And that's what makes this really interesting. And going forward, I'm really invested in the character now, just because I want to continue to see how he handles this, especially being with a character like Summer, who's used to doing something like this, but doesn't have any powers. She's just along for the ride. Really good book. I really enjoyed the artwork. The facial expressions are really on point. Just to give you an idea of what the characters are going through and what they're feeling. Overall, it's a solid second book, I think. And I look forward to seeing what's next. I really like the way that they portray this operator character. He just looks really cool, the way he has kind of all like that Tron sweater on. And that's probably my favorite part of the artwork.
Yeah, I like it too. It didn't necessarily take the path that I thought that it would. I like that Miguel is still hyper focused on getting help from Superman, which makes sense considering his past. But I also liked how, you know, like a lot of young people do, they kind of romanticize things. And then when the going gets tough, they realize, oh, maybe this isn't what I really want. But in the end, kind of the inherent, heroic aspects of Miguel's personality come out, and he does the right thing in the end. One thing that I didn't enjoy in this episode as much as I did the first one was the Dial H. Heroes that they turn into. The first issue was really inspired. This one, the heroes were just okay. They weren't super spectacular. But I will give a lot of credit to Joe Quinones for the way he can change his art style. So I was really impressed with that, just based on the fact that that's not an easy thing to do, you know? And he does give a different flavor and a different feel to the art based on what particular hero is on the panel at or on the page at any one particular time. So, all right. First book I'm going to talk about is Freedom Fighters number 5. This is written by Robert Venditti, pencils are by Eddie Barrows, inks by Eber Ferreira, colors by Adriano Lucas, and letters by And World Design. We finally have the return of Uncle Sam, and it's just as epic and awesome as you would expect it to be. Uncle Sam shows up and he really starts kicking some Nazi butt, but it's not too long before the other freedom fighters have to come to the rescue, only because there are so many Nazis. I mean, the Nazis have taken over the world, basically. And so Uncle Sam, despite all his power, he's not really in a position to take on all of them on his own. And you also have to remember that Uncle Sam gets his powers through belief. And while this Nazi-occupied United States, while its citizens are starting to remember what it means to be to have freedom and life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and start to believe in the American dream once again, and that belief is what powers Uncle Sam, but the belief is still tenuous. It hasn't really grown to the level that we hope it will, or I imagine it will. And so although Uncle Sam is back, there's enough belief for him to have returned. He's not probably at the level that he'll be at eventually. So again, it makes him very tough to take on all these Nazis. So in the end, he's rescued by the rest of the freedom fighters, which Black Condor has a really funny line. He's like, basically, we stuck our neck out for this geezer, as he's laying there on their ship looking pretty old and tired. So the other thing I'll mention, actually two things. The artwork is spectacular, as it's been throughout, with Eddie Barrows. And I got to give a shout out once again to Adriano Lucas. I've given Freedom Fighters my book of the week in the past, and a lot of that is based on the fact that it's absolutely incredible color work. There's always at least one page with some kind of giant explosion or some kind of bright colors that really let Adriano show off. And this one's no exception. There's a giant splash page of the human bomb taking on a war wheel, which, if you don't know what that is, I'm not going to go into detail here because I don't want to spoil it. I'll just say it's a Nazi weapon of mass destruction, and human bomb takes it on. And it's, again, the page is just spectacular. So that was really great to see. Once again, Adriano didn't let me down. It's almost to the point now when I'm checking out the latest issue of Freedom Fighters where I'm turning each page with great anticipation, waiting for the page where it really kind of knocks me over with this incredible color work. So there's also the last thing I'll mention is the final splash page with Overman, who's sort of the Superman of the Nazi Empire, I suppose you'd say. And he's basically the reason that the Nazis won the war. And I don't know if this is the same one from World War II, or if it's a new one they've grown or developed or what have you. But he's kept in isolation. But now that Uncle Sam has been spotted and has returned, there Adolf Hitler Jr., Adolf Hitler II, is ready to unleash his secret weapon. So next issue, Overman goes to war. So I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this Freedom Fighters title. And I think it's a real shame because I think it's one of the best books that DC's putting out right now. It's just good, solid storytelling, incredible art, incredible color work. And more than anything, it's just fun. It's fun and it feels like a classic DC story, kind of an instant classic, if you will. So highly, highly recommend picking up Freedom Fighters. What do you have up next, Manny?
Kind of spoilers there, don't you think, for Freedom Fighters?
Eh, not really. I mean, when you read the issue, there's a lot more there than I'm letting on. So,
my thing with Freedom Fighters, I understand, you know, kind of the buildup and anticipation they have to have for Uncle Sam's return. I don't know. I found myself this issue kind of starting to get bored with the idea of Uncle Sam returning. And I mean, it just feels like it's been dragged on, maybe one issue too many, but with that whole Overman aspect, and did raise an eyebrow a little bit to, you know, to grab my attention again. But it was close to losing me. I have to agree with you. The art by Barrows is fantastic. You know, a lot of those pages with Uncle Sam need to also be able to convey emotion, a kind of that hope and that feeling that Uncle Sam character is supposed to bring, while at the same time he has those pages with the fury and the anger of a Nazi. So I have to. It's still a good book, but like I said, I just want the story kind of to move along a little bit faster now. And hopefully now with that, it does. With that said, my next book is The Terrifics, issue number 15, which is going to be the first issue of a new arc called The God Game. And it's written now by Gene Bling Yang with artwork by Steven Segovia, colors by Photo Bunker. And so the whole story with Java is pretty much done. And so now it's, you know, what's next for the Terrific, specifically Mr. Terrific. And now, this other multiverse version of his wife, who on his planet passed away in an accident, Paula, or Mrs. Terrific, as she's known in her universe, where he's the one who actually died in an accident. And they're taking some time to get to know each other. They're taking some time to... I'm not really sure what they're doing. I just think that vice versa, they miss their spouses, but at the same time, they're smart enough to realize that that's not the person they lost. Then there's no replacing them. And I think that's where they are as far as a relationship goes. But you can tell that they really like to spend time with each other, and they know each other very, very well, of course. So the rest of the members of the Terrifics, they're at Stag Industries testing out new state-of-the-art equipment. And in this case, they're testing out something for combat training, which looks like it's some sort of virtual reality interface that doesn't work very well, and it gets them into trouble when they can't get out. But it looks like there's greater forces at play that now has the Terrifics in a bind, and that includes Mr. Terrific as well, Plastic Man, Phantom Girl, and of course Metamorpho. You know, overall, it just seems like it's the appropriate type of book for this type of adventure and this type of a story, I guess, that you can tell with kind of, you know, larger than life snakes. And then you have Plastic Man antics and, you know, the ability of Metamorpho to kind of turn into whatever he wants, all at the same time having a grounded character like Mr. Terrific. And, it's really weird. It's out there, but I just find it enjoyable just because it fits the characters. And the artwork, the color work specifically, I love the colorful, again, faces in this case. And it's a really good job by Segovia and the rest of the team in putting together a really, really good book. And I'm not sure if I'm mistaken or correct, but I think this is Joanne's first shout out to Terrifics, and I think he did a good job, but I'm really curious to see where it goes from here and see how much further out there it's gonna go.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Gene. I'm trying to think of what he's been working on lately. I mean, he did the new Superman, you know, the one where he was in China. Before that, before DC Rebirth, he was actually on Superman, but I can't remember if he's been doing anything since then. So it's good to see him back on a DC book. He's definitely a talented writer. I'm way behind on the Terrifics. I keep telling myself I'm going to catch up, but I just haven't had a chance. But I wanted to ask you if you noticed who was on the cover, Manny.
On the cover, yeah, actually, I noticed a few things about the cover. Let me go back to it. I had it closed. I closed it. I had a bunch of notes from different artists and different people in general.
Yeah, Mitch is on there, which I just
right.
I got a kick out of, and apparently Mitch did too. He thought it was pretty funny, and he says he'll sign that cover if you bring it to him, but he's going to sign it. Curse you, Shaner. it's Evan Doc Shaner who did the cover. So yeah, pretty funny. All right, up next for me we have Hardcore. Number 5, this is from a concept by Robert Kirkman and Mark Silvestri. This issue 5, is written by Andy Diggle. Alessandro Vitti is the artist. Adriana Lucas, there he is again, is handling the colors, and Thomas Maurer is handling the letters. We also have a really cool cover from Dan Panosian, who's been handling the covers for these. And I really like that Dan's doing the covers because it gives it a real movie poster kind of feel. So I think it suits the book really well, because I've been saying this all along about this title. It really feels like a summer blockbuster action movie, you know, one of those kind of movies that you don't have to think too much. You just sit back, enjoy the spectacle while you eat your popcorn and sip on your Coke. And that's what this has been all along. So I'm not going to get too into the story details at all, because to say anything about this issue would really give it away. Last issue ended on a cliffhanger, and pretty much everything is resolved here, but they do leave it open to do another volume, but I'm not sure they're going to. They kind of mention it in the back that as we close out on this chapter of Hardcore, we'll give a round of applause to the creative team, and stay tuned, because they're not ready to reveal what's going to happen in the next chapter, but it's going to be pretty cool. So they may be waiting to see how it does in trade. But I really enjoyed this. If you were waiting for it in trade, the trade is supposed to be out on June 26th of this year, and I highly recommend it. I think this is one of those books that will read even better all in one sitting, because it's so fast-paced. It's one of those titles where you get a big chunk of story, but it's so fast-paced when you read it, it seems like it goes really, really quickly, but it's just because there's so much action. So I really enjoyed it. I think that Alessandro Vitti was a great choice for artist. He has a pretty fine line work, but he handles the action really well. And sometimes with really fine lines, the art can feel like it flows really well, but it doesn't have a lot of weight to it, which can sometimes make it seem less impactful. That's not the case with VT's art. He does a great job of making the panels and the action feel very visceral and very impactful. And once again, Adriana Lucas, I mean, this guy is like, if I had to choose right now, he without question would be my colors of the year. He's doing absolutely spectacular work. And the thing is, like, I know him mostly from Thief of Thieves, which has much more of a muted palette. He's always done an excellent job on it, but I don't know that he had the chance to shine, and no pun intended when I say that. But with this title, where there's a lot of explosions and a lot of bright colors, and he's really getting a chance to show his stuff, along with Freedom Fighters, which is kind of the same, I'm blown away by this guy's current work that he's putting out. It's absolutely spectacular. So kudos to him. So I don't think you checked this out, did you, Manny?
No, not yet. I have not.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It's a whole lot of fun. And like I said, I think you probably could read the whole thing and all 5 issues in under an hour pretty easily. So I hope we get another volume, because it was a whole lot of fun. And the concept's really cool. I feel like we've only scratched the surface. If you don't remember, it's kind of like that Emilio Estevez, Mick Jagger movie, Free Jack, where you can transfer your consciousness into another person's body. But they do it by basically tagging the people with this little tiny piece of technology that basically they shoot them in the neck with it, and it kind of attaches close to their spinal column, so they have access to their brain and everything. And then the person that's in the hardcore sphere basically like jacks in and takes over the other person's body. But that little tag, that little tracer that allows the person in the hardcore sphere to take over the body, a thing that's only good for like 48 or 72 hours, and then it like decays. So there's no trace left when they do the autopsy or whatever. There's no way to find out that this person's been taken over. So what that means is the person that's taking over the body, they've got to get whatever they need to get done, and they only have a limited amount of time, because if they're if they're still jacked in when that little tracer thing degrades all the way, then they're dead, basically. Their mind will be destroyed, and their body, you know, can't live without their mind. So it adds a certain level of tension to the story. So again, I think it's a cool concept. It's not 100% original. We've seen different movies and stories, even Quantum Leap to some extent, you know, where Sam Beckett's jumping around into different people, kind of a similar concept. So again, there's a lot to do here. There's a lot to explore, a lot of stories that can be told. So I do hope that we see more. All right, Manny, you're up next.
Okay. For my next book, I have Books of Magic number 7, written by Cat Howard, drawn by Tom Fowler, with colors by Jordan Boyce. And I thought the cover was pretty cool, by the regular cover by Kai Carpenter, which is like, I don't know, just reminded me of like those like Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew type of covers from those books from back in the day. And I just wanted to point that out off the bat, because I mean it's on the cover. We pick up with Tim and Rose. They are on the run trying to go on and see what's going on. Trying to locate Tim's friend Ellie, who has been taken to another realm. Meanwhile, on I guess you can say the Marvel side of town, as Harry Potter fans would call, normal society. We can see the headlines of the missing students, which is Ellie, and then also the death of Bartholomew Brisby, Mr. Brisby, who we saw his head last issue. They're trying to, meanwhile, Rose and Tim are trying to figure out how to get to Ellie, and it's not going very well. Just because it seems like there's some forces that are after them. At the same time, you also find out that the librarian from the high school who has been after Tim is still after him along with Rose, and he puts him in the wrong path to the land of the fairies, where Tim has memories of being there or feels like he's been there before, but he doesn't remember. And he's trying to figure out why that is. I find this book to be just kind of a segue book, I guess, to some of the characters that he meets a little farther down the line at the end, and just kind of pretty quick. And you can just kind of slide by it, not too much dialogue in it, and just kind of being introduced the two characters into this land, and I want to know where they're kind of going with this and how long it's going to take, just because it hasn't been necessarily too exciting or nothing has been too captivating. It still interests me just because it kind of has some similarity to other books I like Rise of the Magi, never got finished over at Top Cow, and Oberon has a couple of tones like that from Aftershock. So, it's something I want to keep reading, but I kind of want the ball to get rolling a little bit quicker on this one. Given what they've done already with him in previous issues, where he kind of dwelled in an enchanted land for a while, it feels like I've been there, done that, and I just wonder how quickly they're going to move with it, because the book hasn't necessarily taken the direction that I thought it would with Tim you know, we get to see a lot more of Tim's education with magic, and kind of see him learn a little bit more. And it's been, it's actually been more of him running and not doing too much magic at all. So it's okay. Like I said, I think the next issue or two will really dictate how I feel about the series in general. The artwork, I liked it. The colors are a little bit dark. And I'm not sure if that's just because a lot of things were in the shadows, or that's just the way they wanted to portray that land. But I wasn't too much of a fan of the tones they used for the majority of the issue.
Yeah, I haven't been checking it out at all. I never read the original Books of Magic either. I've heard good things. I just never got around to checking it out. All right, next book I'm going to talk about is Justice League Dark, number 10. Written by James Tynan. We have pencils by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. Inks are by Raul Fernandez. Colors by Brad Anderson. And letters by Rob Lee. You know, I'm not a big magic guy in terms of these characters. That being said, right from the start, I think James Tynan has done a really great job with Justice League Dark. And right about the time he hit issue 3, this title's been firing on all cylinders ever since then. So it doesn't change. This is no exception here. Lords of Order chapter 3 is this issue. He's doing a really great job letting this story kind of stand on its own in terms of what these magical Justice League characters are up against. But what's interesting is that even though he's doing that, he's allowing that the reasons behind the other kind showing up and the different trees, like the Tree of Wonder, which they're talking about in this issue, it all ties into the Source Wall being broken. So he's taking his starting point from other places in the DC universe. So for that reason, even though this book is firmly rooted in the magical corner of the DC universe, it still feels very connected to the bigger story that James and Scott Snyder are telling in the Justice League title. And we see ramifications of that in other titles like The Flash and, to a lesser extent, Batman. But again, this title stands on its own. But if you are reading other parts of the DC universe, then you get even more out of it. So I love the tone. I love the feel. I love the scripting. I think James he's one of the strongest scripters in working in comics right now. And I think that's really proven whenever him and Scott Snyder work on an issue together. Oftentimes they're writing it together, but James is doing the scripting and you know, Scott takes a back seat. Because again, I think James just has such a great flair for dialogue. I will say that if you're one of those people that doesn't like a real wordy book, you may notice that this book is pretty dialogue heavy. I personally enjoy that. It reminds me a lot of the comics that I read growing up, where you're not done in 10 minutes, you know, take you, 20, 30 minutes maybe, because there's a lot of information here. And again, it goes to show that this book can really stand on its own, even if you don't have a lot of history or knowledge of these magical characters or the magical corner of the DC universe. James does a good job of kind of explaining things through exposition and the way people are talking to each other. That gives you a lot of knowledge, and he doesn't hit you over the head with it, and it doesn't feel like a slog. Because again, he's very gifted at the scripting. So it's a great book. I feel like it's really firing on all cylinders. The artwork by Alvaro Martinez Bueno, the inks by Fernandez, the colors by Brad Anderson, they're all really clicking. It's a beautiful book to look at. Some of the layouts that Bueno Martinez is using are spectacular. There's one page in particular here where Martinez Bueno kind of uses the Ankh, you know, the symbol of life that is closely associated with Adam Strange. He basically divides the panels up with this Ankh that's almost a full page spread. And I really enjoyed that. It's a very striking page. And I immediately noticed, I was like, oh, that's cool. Like the panels are divided up here by this Ankh. It's a really clever way to do it. So, I'm not giving away too many story details because again, I think it's one you need to pick up and read for yourself, but really enjoying it. And, again, we're seeing some aspects of the magical universe magical corner of the DC universe that we haven't seen before. We're getting some info about like John Constantine and Cersei that we haven't seen before. And this one ends on a cliffhanger as well, which, I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen next, but things are not looking good for the magical denizens of the DC universe. If I had any nitpick whatsoever, and it's a very, very small quibble, and it's only because Deadman is one of my favorite magical characters, and he's in the book, but he hasn't really had much screen time yet. So I wouldn't mind an issue where Deadman got a little bit more of the spotlight. That would do me just fine. So again, it's a minor quibble. There in no way am I thinking about dropping this book or putting it lower in the stack. It's a must read. It's one that I read pretty much right up there in the top of the stack whenever it comes out. So really, really enjoying it. Did you get a chance to check out this issue, Manny?
No, I think I'm an issue or two behind, but I have to agree with you so far. I mean, the spotlight that just is Dark has given on some of the characters has been really great and something I really enjoyed. And I agree with you, it is super dialogue heavy, but I mean there's a lot of things to explain, and a lot of these characters have had some pretty deep moments, so it's been super enjoyable.
Yeah, definitely. What do you have up next?
I have Detective Comics 1002.
Good pick.
And this is the second by Peter J. Tomasi, with pencils by Brad Walker, inked by Andrew Hennessy, with colors by Nathan Fairbairn. And So it picks up right where we left off from issue 1001 with the Batman kind of getting his ass handed to him by Arkham Knight, his army, I guess you can call them, soldiers, after he let off this light bomb in the city that lights everything up, making everything super bright. And then we see the confrontation between them, the cops, civilians. It's then when Batman starts noticing little things about the way that Arkham Knight operates, where he's not just trying to take people's life in general. So he starts kind of questioning his motives. It kind of leads to Mexican standoff between everybody, and everyone decides to fall back. And then meanwhile, back in the Batcave, we see that Damian, being Damian, he tries to go out on his own with not so great results. And I think that's all I'm going to say about this issue. it's an enjoyable issue to read. Characters are exactly who you expect them to be, especially Damian, who he's just being hard-headed and thinks that he can do it on his own. You can see what he's thinking. As he's underwater, you get that classic personality of his, and somebody who knows him very well. Actually, somebody who knows Batman also very well, just by some of the when they're in the Batcave, they're analyzing some of the arrowheads and some of the tech that Arkham Knight had that seems to incline that he knows who Batman is. The only thing I'm going to say that's not enjoyable about this is that I'm a big fan of all of the Arkham series games that they've made. Of course, Arkham Knight is one of them. And I mean, it's not a spoiler because this game's been out forever. And from the very beginning, when you play the game, when you see the trailer for it, I remember being talking with my friends about it. You knew that the Arkham Knight was Jason Todd, and the developer swore up and down that it wasn't the case. And at the end of the game, it was Jason Todd. It was super predictable, and kind of the way they're making this seem. I'm gonna give Tomasi way more credit than just to do that again. And to stick the character there, especially because of what the character, how well he's been in his own title over Red Hood and the Outlaws, or in this case, now it's called Red Hood Outlaw by Scott Lobdell. And I don't think Tomasi would just take the character and stick him, right in Detective. It would be super anticlimactic and very, I don't know, it would just... I'm more interested in, who else could it be if it's not Jason Todd, because like I said, he knows the Bat family very, very well. So just trying to figure out, going to go down the list of other possibilities, because it'll make for, I think, for a better story. I like the way that the Arkham Knight, it has more of a medieval take on his armor and his weaponry. I think that was pretty cool. So it's it definitely got me hooked, and I'm looking forward to the next issue.
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing that I'm enjoying about Detective is how timeless it feels. And I was talking to Brad Walker the other day on Twitter. He said that was by design. Him and Tomasi want to make it feel like a classic Batman story that could fit in any era of Batman, and they're definitely doing a good job with that. And it's not to say that they're contradicting anything that Tom King's doing. It's just, the what Tom is doing with Batman is, a real deep dive into the psyche of who Bruce Wayne is, who Batman is, his motivations, what drives him, and how he deals with trauma, basically. This is not that. This is like a fun, action-packed comic about Batman where if you don't go in for the kind of deeper dive where you need to think about motivations and it's kind of a deconstruction of the hero and you're tearing him down to build him back up, then this is exactly what you want it to be. It's a tale that feels, again, instantly classic with a cool new villain and absolutely incredible artwork by the entire art team of Walker, Andrew Hennessy, and Nathan Fairbairn on colors. So, yeah, it's really, really good. I have to say that since Rebirth started, Detective's been one of their strongest titles. James Tynan on it from the beginning, and now with, they had Brian Edward Hill got to do an arc. James Robinson did an arc, and then Tomasi came on, and it's been firing on all cylinders ever since. So probably the most underrated, one of the most underrated DC titles coming out right now, I think. Not enough people are talking about how spectacular Detective Comics is, so just want to give a shout out.
The last thing I'll say about the art, I don't know about you, but Batman, the way he's drawn, a lot different than what I've seen in any other book recently, unless I'm crazy. Just he's super bulky. He has kind of a slimmer, taller head, and I don't know. I appreciated the like if it's out of an older book, and I can I can appreciate that. Even in the Batcave when he has no shirt on. I mean, just super big, you know, muscular guy. And same thing with the way that they portray the Arkham Knight. The armor is almost kind of almost like football pads, classic knight armor, I guess you'd say. And it just kind of fits that kind of style that you're saying, that like an action packed thriller. Definitely different. It just makes for kind of a cool one-on-one battle. But I think the big payoff in this arc will be the reveal of who is behind the mask in this case. Is it the same guy as in the video games, which should suck because I don't want Jason Todd to be the Arkham Knight in the series, or is it some other character that maybe we didn't think of? My favorite page on this one is kind of the panels were actually cut kind of dramatically, so you can see where, you know, Batman's face, and then you have another panel right next to it with him holding his batarangs, and then Arkham Knight with his like stars or wherever they are, the police officers and their guns, the soldiers and their bows, and then the innocent bystanders and their phones. And, you know, just you can really see the tension in a couple of pages that they do this in. I thought that was done really well.
Yeah.
What did you think of that, Batman?
No, I like the way he looks. And what I didn't necessarily expect in this issue, though, is I didn't expect, I mean, it's a cliffhanger, so we won't find out until next issue, but I would have thought we would have had to go a long time before we find out who the Arkham Knight is, but it looks like we're going to find out next issue. But that kind of surprised me, but at the same time, it excited me. Like, I'm really ready for the next issue to find out who it is. So, all right. Up next for me is The Flash number 69, written by Joshua Williamson. We have art by Scott Collins, colors by Luis Guerrero, and letters by Steve Wands. This is the greatest trick of all finale. It's really reestablishing the original Trickster as a formidable foe of Flash, James Jesse, and the Flash sort of, I guess you'd say it's a draw. He doesn't completely win the battle with the Trickster. But what's interesting is the fact that, you know, he kind of wins, he kind of restores Central City back to normal, I guess you'd say, or as normal as Central City ever is. But he doesn't really solve the problem. And he's left having to kind of face this idea that he failed. And that leads directly into issue 70, which is going to be awesome because it's Flash Year One by Joshua Williamson. So we're going back in time for the next five issues to when Barry first became the Flash, and apparently it's a lesson that he learned back then but has since forgotten. So now is the perfect time to jump on the Flash title if you haven't been reading it already, because what's going to happen next in Flash is going to, first of all, it's going to be really epic from Joshua Williamson, but second of all, it's going to be really important, I think, to who Barry Allen is moving forward. And these year one books, I mean, you don't, as a DC creator, you don't just get to slap year one on a title without coming up with a really, really good idea. So again, perfect time to jump on if you haven't been reading The Flash. Joshua Williamson loves this character, and he's been doing a really good job of stewarding Barry Allen going forward. There's a few things that happen in this issue where you kind of nod your head and go, yeah, I've been waiting for that to happen. And there's some mysteries that get started as well. So that's one thing that's been great about Joshua being able to stay on this title for so long. He's been on it ever since Rebirth started, is he gets to play the long game, maybe more so than a lot of other comics out there. You know, we talk about writing for the trade or everything's wrapped up every six issues. Josh has undercurrents, that plot lines that are running a lot longer than that. So in that way, reminds me of some older comics from a different generation. So really, really good story. Scott Collins, you know, along with Howard Porter, these guys are both just born to draw the Flash. Their art's very kinetic. There aren't a lot of, in fact, as I'm scrolling through, what's interesting about this issue is Scott Collins didn't put any borders on his panels. You know, usually panels have a black outline, and he didn't do that with this issue. So it gives it a really kind of a lighter feel in a way. So I'm curious why he chose to do that. I didn't notice that he'd been doing it in previous issues. I mean, maybe he had. Maybe he's been doing it all along, and I just didn't notice until this issue. But the art's really good. The color work, you know, it's Flash, so it's a pretty primary palette. A lot of bright colors. You know, traditional superhero book. Barry Allen is traditionally a very positive hero, although Josh has really been putting him through the ringer lately. And so this book hasn't been quite as bright or as fun as it maybe you would expect. But Luis Guerrero does a great job with the art as well. So really enjoyed this issue. All right, what do you have up next, Manny? One book to go?
You know, I think that's all I had. I think I only had four up.
All right. Let me go with my last title then. It's Skyward. It's my book of the week. It's issue number 12, so the second issue of the third volume. They took a little break after we had a cliffhanger reveal at the end of issue 10. And even though it was two issues past, I'm not going to talk about what it was because it was a real shock. It's a huge change going forward in the story. It has to do with a character returning. And then this issue kind of explains how that happens. And so a lot of this issue does take place in the past, but it really sets up everything else going forward. And what I was really struck by is how great the story is and how natural it feels. But when Joe Henderson was originally conceiving this story, this wasn't the path that he was going to take. And then when he made the change and brought a character back that you wouldn't necessarily expect, all of a sudden the whole story opened up and made even more sense to him. So I totally get it. When you read this, you're like, yeah, how could it have ever been anything but this in a way? And so it's really, really cool. And I can't wait to see what happens next. The other thing that I'll say, as I've said from the beginning with this book, Lee Garbett, I mean, holy cow, the guy is an incredibly talented artist, and he's doing something that's so challenging here. You know, the premise of the book being that Earth has, you know, just a fraction of the gravity that it used to have and everything that comes with that. And by that, I mean, you have to be careful when you're drawing. Like, nothing can ever be on a surface. You can't ever put, you know, a glass of water and it just is there. The water would be floating. The glass would be floating. People would be floating, their hair. Things just don't lay naturally like they would in regular gravity. So it's an incredibly challenging book to draw, and he's really up to the task. Antonio Fabella, the colorist, has been doing a great job as well. This arc, it seems like we're going back to a little bit more of the brighter palette that we saw in the beginning. We had an arc or two there where things got a little dark for a little while. Now they're sort of lightened up, which again sort of suits the mood of the story going forward. But this title, Skyward, got a ton of awards in our Comic Source Best of 2018, rightfully so. If you're not reading it, you really need to get out there and pick it up. This is an absolutely incredible book. And being that it's Joe Henderson's first comic work, I mean, this guy's got a really, really bright future ahead of him if he wants to continue writing comics. He has a day job as the showrunner for Lucifer, so the guy's a storyteller at heart. So I'm sure he has a very successful career ahead of him in television if he stays and follows that path. If he wants to transition over to comics, I think he would have an incredibly successful career in comics as well. Or maybe we'll get the best of both worlds and he'll continue to do both. So that's my hope. Even though I don't watch Lucifer, just based on the strength of how good this story is, I certainly would pay attention to Joe if he's creating another TV show or working on another show. And I may check out Lucifer at some point as well if I get the time. So Skyward, definitely my book of the week. It seems like I pick it every time it comes out. I know that's not the case, but I know I have picked it before. But it's a really, really good title. So do yourself a favor and check it out. So let me give a rundown of some of the other books that are out today that you may want to be on the lookout for at your local comic shop. From Aftershock Comics, I mentioned at the top of the show, Dark Red has sold out issue 1, but there's a second printing that's supposed to hit comic shops today along with issue 2. We have the fifth issue of Lollipop Kids from Adam and Aiden Glass. We have Walk Through Hell number 9 by Garth Ennis and Goran Tsuzuka, as I mentioned before, and then The Replacer graphic novel by Zach Thompson that I talked about at the top of the show as well. Meanwhile, over at Boom, we have the fifth issue of Firefly. At Dark Horse, we have Fight Club Volume 3, number 4. At DC, we have Action Comics number 1010, which we'll be talking about on upcoming Superman Sunday. Batgirl's up to issue 34. We talked about Detective Comics. We talked about Dial H for Hero. I think Doomsday Clock number 6 is finally hitting stands. I know it's been pushed back, I don't know how many times now. I lost count. But that's supposed to be out today as well. Heroes in Crisis number 8, which I'm kind of surprised that you didn't talk about, Manny. But it's hard to talk about that book because basically all the answers are revealed. We find out who was behind the events at Sanctuary, what the consequences and what the fallout and how it all wraps up. I have no idea. There's still 2 issues to go, but that was an interesting one. Did you get a chance to read it yet, Manny?
Actually, I'm in the middle of reading it right now.
Yeah, it's rough, man. It's a good story, but it's one of those situations where what happens in the story makes sense. I totally get it. It's poignant. It's sad. It's everything that Tom wanted in examining heroes in crisis, heroes dealing with, you know, traumatic events and how it affects them. Like, it totally works on every level. But at the same time, when you're reading it, it's one of those things where the events that are happening in the comic, you don't want these things to be happening because you feel bad for the hero. You're like, no, it can't turn out this way. This can't be what really happened. It's tough. It's really tough. So I'm going to be curious to see what people's reactions are to it tomorrow. Also, Naomi has been selling out left and right, written by David F. Walker and Brian Michael Bendis. Incredible art by Jamal Campbell. So I think every issue has sold out. There are reprintings. So they're supposed to be a reprinting. They're calling it a final printing for issues 1, 2, and 3, and they're all supposed to hit stands tomorrow. And we also have Wonder Woman number 69 from DC. Over at IDW, Dick Tracy Forever number 1 with a Michael Avon Oeming cover, which I can't really think of anybody more suited to draw Dick Tracy than Michael Avon Oeming. There's also a Star Trek Year 5 number 1 issue hitting stands tomorrow. And this is basically the continuation of Star Trek the original series. It ran for 4 seasons, so this just picks up where season 4 left off, as we've seen them do with things like Buffy and Smallville. DC did it with Smallville in a digital first series. Over at Image, we have Ascender from Dustin Nguyen. He's on art, and it's written by Jeff Lemire. That's the next chapter of their big Descender story about a boy robot. We also have Criminal number 4 from Brubaker and Phillips, and Spawn number 296 as we march ever closer to issue 300. And then finally from Image, I'll mention The Wicked and the Divine number 43 from, I think it's Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey on that book. It's a really popular title, and that one's winding down as well. Meanwhile, over at Marvel, Nick Spencer's Amazing Spider-Man is up to number 20. Fantastic Four from Dan Slott is up to number 9. Another super popular title at Marvel has a ton of second and third printings, and that's Immortal Hulk. Looks like we have new printings of issues 16. I think, which came out 2 weeks ago with some really cool Alex Ross covers. Marvel Comics Presents is up to issue 4. We have a second printing of Spider-Man Life Story number 1, which is Spider-Man aging in real time. So that's an interesting premise. I picked up issue 1 and 2, but I haven't had a chance to read them yet. We also have a new Thanos number 1, just in time for the Avengers Endgame movie. It's a 6-issue limited series. It's got art by Ariel Olivetti, and it's written by Tinney Howard, who's a name that's I'm hearing a lot more often, and rightfully so. In fact, I think she signed a Marvel exclusive. Super talented writer, and it's nice to see her finally getting to work on some really popular characters. Finally, over at Valiant, a couple books hitting stands today. We have Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 6, Forgotten Queen number 3, and the first issue of Punk Mambo. Anything else coming out today that you wanted to mention that I didn't talk about, Manny?
No, I think we covered it. And yeah, you're right. This issue is pretty freaking rough.
Yeah, that Heroes in Crisis number 8, man. Whew, a lot of people are going to be... There are going to be some people that are upset. But I go back to what Tom told me when I saw him at New York Comic Con, I think it was. And I talked about the first couple issues of Heroes in Crisis were out and people were giving him a little bit of a bad time. And I asked him how he was handling it. And he was basically like, man, you know, once you've gone through the nightmare that was the Batman wedding that wasn't, then everything else after that's just whatever. You know, he got death threats over that Batman Catwoman wedding, which was completely ridiculous. So once you've done that, once you've survived that, you probably have a pretty thick skin and you can pretty much survive anything. So I'm sure Tom's not worried, but again, I'm just curious to see what people's reaction is going to be to that issue. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for joining us as always. Don't forget, this issue of The Comic Source has been brought to you by Aftershock Comics. They're shaking up your local comic shop with a lot of groundbreaking series. Again, we highly encourage you to go to aftershockcomics.com, where you can find story synopses, creator lineups, and the diamond codes for all their books, so you can let your retailers know to order them for you. As we've said many, many times on the podcast, nothing you can do more to support creators and smaller publishers, and also to help out your local comic shop, than tell them what you're interested in. Tell them what you want to pre-order. You know, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to pay for it ahead of time. Some shops you might, but just by letting your shops know that this is what you're interested in, it helps them order more accurately, and you don't miss out on books. You know, like A Walk Through Hell or Animosity with Dark Red issue 1 from Tim Seeley and Corn Howell. Selling out, you know, they had to go to a second printing. There's people that probably wanted to get their hands on it that weren't able to because it was so popular. And, you know, it may have been a situation where there was only one or two extra copies to go on the rack, if that, you know, and word of mouth. And all of a sudden it's this hot book and everybody wants to read it and it's not there. You can't find it. So it's to your benefit to let your retailer know that you want to order these Aftershock comics. Again, you can go to aftershockcomics.com and find the diamond codes and let them know what the codes are, and they can reorder for you pretty easily. So if you did miss out on Dark Red, second printing of issue 1 out today, and I highly recommend picking that up along with issue number 2. So be sure you go to aftershockcomics.com and check out all their series. You know, we wouldn't support them if they weren't an incredible publisher with tons of talent, big names, you know, Garth Ennis, Paul Jenkins, Adam Glass. These are, you know, really talented creators, Marguerite Bennett, Tim Seeley. They're doing really great work. And then young and up and coming talent like Hayden Sherman and Stephanie Phillips, Evgeny Bornikov. I mean, they really have something special at Aftershock. So we highly encourage you to read Dangerously in 2019 and go and check it out. So as I said, that's going to do it for this episode. Anything else you want to add, Manny?
No, not today. I think we're good.
All right, everybody. Make sure you get out there to your local comic shop today, pick up some books, and let us know what you're reading. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.